Hello, I'm Dorothy. In the mid-1990s, a group of older women shared their experiences of feminism at 10:40 dinner and discussion evenings. Their stories were recorded on tape. The podcast that you're about to hear is made from one of these recordings. The following questions shaped their stories. What attracted you to feminism? How has feminism impacted on your life? What have been your positive experiences of feminism? Have there been any disappointments? And what are your issues now? This is Rob's story.
Having had a teacher background, somebody asked me whether I had brought my overheads with me for this particular presentation. I hate to say I forgot my overheads. I was going to bring photographs, but I haven't done all of that, so you'll just have to listen to me espousing. Also, somebody suggested that this might have some juicy bits in it. I hate to tell you that we've been given instructions that no names are to be mentioned. So you have to read between the lines. What attracted me to feminism? I think I was already there. I don't think I got attracted to it. I think I was born into it, actually. And I'll start with about three scenarios that occurred to me. Age five, I had the baker come to the front door. This is when they delivered bread, you know, hands-on sort of stuff, not even in paper or plastic. And, I mean, I had short, curly hair, I guess, at age five, and I was probably fairly muscly. And he said to me, "Are you a boy or a girl?" And I thought for a second, and I thought, I know it's better to say I'm a boy, because I know you get more goodies if you're a boy. So I told him I was a boy. So I was quite aware at that particular age that there was quite a difference between the genders in that respect. I was a tomboy. I spent a lot of time playing with the boy next door, who really appreciated my playing with him, actually. And at about age 10, I was getting to that age where one was nearly getting towards puberty, and the boys that were friends with the boy next door were starting to get at him because he was playing with me. And he actually said to me one day that he actually preferred playing with me because I was more fun, but he really couldn't be seen with me walking to the shops because the other boys would see him and make fun of him. And that really hit home, that difference was starting to occur at that point in time. And I also remember at about age 11 when I started sort of, you know, getting boobs and having other bodily changes, like sitting next to the boy next door, and my thighs were getting a bit fatter and as a female, and that people started relating to me differently. Even my father, actually, I felt moved further away, wasn't interacting so much physically. And I guess I was really pissed off that suddenly I was being treated differently because I was a female, because I felt genderless up until that point in time. But I was also very much aware that being female meant that I wasn't going to get as many advantages. And I'm actually going to skip most of my school life and go on to age 23 when I became a lesbian. Should have been a bit earlier. Somebody said that they knew that I was going to be a lesbian and they would have introduced me to Camp Ink, which started in 1969 down the bottom of Glebe Point Road. And I was actually living in St John's Road, Glebe, in 1969, and they didn't tell me. Mind you, I would have been probably a bit scared at that point in time, and I actually went through a marriage in 1970, stayed for a couple of years, and left in terms of having a lesbian relationship with another person. But another woman that we didn't know many other, or we didn't really know any other lesbians, and it wasn't until actually watching TV one night that Sue Wills and Gabby Antolovich a program on lesbianism and coming out. which was probably about the first time that they'd been on. I think it was about the time that Peter Duval and the other Peter also were doing a program on coming out. And so we contacted them afterwards, and they talked about Camp Inc. Camp Inc. meaning Campaign Against Moral Persecution, as it was in those days, which started about 1970 and set up in Forest Lodge and then in Glebe. No, it was in Balmain, I think, before that. But there was a women's group attached to Camp Inc. And we went to that, it was on a Wednesday night. And, I mean, those women that I met there are still my friends now, so that sort of, you know, from about 1973, 1974. So it was a very important process that I went through at that particular time. I got involved because, I felt that that was the right way to go, and they were running women's nights, so I became one of those that was running the women's nights on the Wednesday night and setting up some entertainment and serving tea and coffee and talking to the women that came in. I'll include some of my disappointments in going through that, because what I found is that the same women turned up night after night, and then they found somebody and then they went off. And then when they came back, it was because they had a broken relationship, and that really pissed me off, you know, like there was no continuation with that group as a network, and I felt it was an important support network to maintain that. It was also that I got into counselling women too through that, and through phone lines as well, and I also had disappointments in that, in the lesbian situation, because I found that if you counsel people and seem really supportive of them, then they think that you were picking them up and they'd make a move towards you, and I found that very disappointing in some ways, because I was just trying to be supportive. So I felt that there was something wrong there in the way that the lesbian scene was working, and the only things around in terms of going anywhere was a whole lot of, you know, bar dyke scenes, where I remember I went down to one, I think in Manly, was it? Which was sort of like the heavy scene, and you knew it was attached to all the the vice that was going on around the place. And I remember walking in, and before I'd moved sort of like about 2 metres within the room, I got this guy coming up and saying, "How much to watch?" And I went, "What? What is this?" You know, and they had gay male strippers there and things like that. And on the way out, and this is my first experience of a bar scene, there was a big fight going on in the alleyway, and I thought, shit, you know, I really don't want to be involved in this sort of thing. And that was sort of like the early 70s as far as the gay scene was concerned. But I was involved in camp quite heavily, probably from about 73 to the 1980s. And the reason why I was involved in that was that there was a group of males also working in that area who were also espousing very non-sexist point of view, and trying to change the attitude of a lot of gay males that were involved in it as well. I did various jobs in there, you know, other than counselling of women. I was editing Camp Inc. at one stage. But we're also involved in lobbying within the structures that exist, and I felt that that was really important. We did things like develop a submission to the Commission on Human Relations. I also got caught up very heavily in when Mike Clossy got thrown out of a Catholic school, and that was probably one of the first teachers that got thrown out of a school for being gay. I got involved at the beginning of the development of, in 1977 of the, or 76 really, of the Anti-Discrimination Act, and they were actually looking at including homosexuality at that point in time And we talked to the Attorney General about the importance of including it. Unfortunately, it wasn't included at the beginning, but got included later on down the track. I also started working with one of the gay guys actually on looking at custody cases, because we were finding that a lot of both, mainly lesbians, because hardly any gay guys were going for custody at that point in time, mostly lesbians were losing custody of their children through the fact of being lesbians. So we started monitoring these particular cases and trying to do educational things about it. For instance, we talked to the family law court, to the counsellors there. We also talked to marriage guidance counsellors and things like that. So we tried to set up an education thing, and we also sort of hired ourselves out, one male and one female, to talk to anybody at all, like the doctors that were going through Sydney University, or the nurses at Rozelle Hospital, anybody who would take us that were interested in discussing homosexuality. During the early 70s, though, I mean, I recognised that there was some problem in being involved in a male which it was essentially a male organisation, Camp Pink. So I got involved in Women's Liberation and also WELL. I think WELL at the instigation of Jan at that particular time, because I was teaching with Jan. Some disappointments there, because I came from a lesbian point of view and was pushing very much the lesbian issues. I found that Women's Liberation didn't necessarily want to hear it. I think they found it embarrassing in some respects. I think they found, although there were a few lesbians in that, the majority were heterosexual at that point in time. And I guess the issues were around childcare, abortion, etc., and they felt that those were issues which were going to be harmed if lesbianism was mentioned, you know, if you're going to fight with the government about it. In WELL, well, that was interesting. I think I felt I was about one of two lesbians in the whole of WELL, and they thought I was really sweet. And that was the attitude, isn't it? Sweet, you know. It's interesting how a lot of WELL women are now dykes, let alone the Women's Liberation women that I knew at that time. But anyway... I put my name down as the lesbian contact in WELL in the WELL newsletter. I don't think I had one lesbian contact me in the whole time that I'd... but I, at that particular time, for me, I mean, I was attracted to feminism, and what I was trying to do was balance the fact that through Camp Inc. I could put some lesbian issues, but I had to worry about the male gay issues and them seeing that as of higher priority. But they were also lobbying through the system. In Women's Liberation, we were lobbying sort of from outside the system. In WELL, we were lobbying within the system, and somewhere in between, I was trying to get a joining where I could push lesbian issues but have that lobbying both within the system and from without the system, because I saw value in both sorts of methods. I got involved in all the marches at that time and wore the famous T-shirt, I Am a Lesbian Tart, which I still have today, which I picked up in 1974, and Sue Wills has told me it's got to go to the archives. And there was a lack, as I said, in those particular groups about where I was directed because of the problems I saw. And Sue and Merrill were involved in Women's Liberation heavily in about 75, and they started the first lesbian feminist group in Sydney, which I joined. And we were involved in, and Elaine was in that too, I think, we were involved in conflict, we were involved in having a look at ourselves, doing the traditional feminist things about talking about our life experiences and going from there. But we were doing it from the lesbian point of view, and I found that incredibly supportive, actually, because that's the first time that those sort of issues had been really recognised. In terms of the books I was reading at that time, I was reading things like Valerie Solanas, Scum Manifesto, The Society for Cutting Up Men, Rita Mae Brown, the plain brown paper wrapper stuff. And I was heavily involved in the American lesbian politics at that particular time, which were fairly left-wing. In 1975, because of my concern about working with males, I moved away and started a lesbian mothers group, mainly because I was relating to a lesbian mother and I actually needed support, but it didn't work out that way. because what happened was that all the lesbian mothers really needed their support, because I was not a mother. Jan was in that group, and we met over, God, I don't know, the next 6-7 years or so, and it was incredible in terms of networking, support for each other. We also did research of custody cases and what was happening. We also raised money for women that were actually going through custody cases, because it used to cost about $2,000 a day then. And also another part of my life was that I was a teacher, and I'd got into a non-traditional area to start the lesbian teachers group, which Elaine became a member of too. There was about 6 of us to start off with, and then it grew into quite a large group, and we had members from all over New South Wales. We spent a lot of time writing in the newspaper, the teachers' newspaper, Education it's called, and because we had people writing really rude letters back to us, which was wonderful. We really loved it, because then we could write even more about homosexuality and teaching, stuff like that. And we did a hell of a lot, I think, in the first 10 years of that lesbian teachers group, in terms of raising awareness, in developing a support group. We used to run the famous lesbian teachers' tea parties, as we called them. We advertised in Education, and we'd run them on the first weekend of holidays so country teachers could come and join us, and we used to serve lesbian tarts there. That was great. And I think what I got out of that was a fantastic friendship network, and those friends with to this time. In terms of attraction, I think, as I said, I was there already, and I mean, my jobs have got into that too. In 1982, I started a job in girls and maths and science and industrial arts, in trying to get girls more involved in that sort of thing. And I've gone on from that into women and girls policy, and I'm now an EEO coordinator, so I'm still sort of working in the same sort of area. Well, in terms of the impact of feminism on my life, I think it changed my whole life. It gave me the direction that I have in life, which I will still keep ad infinitum. It created, I guess, my whole support network that I have now, it's my whole life, the women that I have met. It's directed my career in terms of where I'm going and what I've done. It's introduced me to a hell of a lot of nice women over the years. So, I mean, that has been great as far as feminism is concerned. In terms of my issues now, there's a lack of energy, I think, in terms of ageing, which is a concern. I've got a real concern about the younger generation pissing on the 70s feminists and thinking it's all been done before, because I don't think it has, and I think the issues that we had then are still ongoing. I'm really concerned about young lesbians being exposed to the gay male scene and the S&M scene, and not seeing positive images of lesbianism. I'm concerned too that we're still fighting some of the same lesbian issues that we were fighting then. I remember in camping getting up and talking about superannuation. I've talked about the amount of money that people were getting on pensions, talking about access to partners in hospital and stuff like that. That is still going on. We are still looking at exactly the same issues. I'm still concerned that the lesbian issues have not got as much priority with the feminist issues as they should have, etc. And I still feel that in the feminist movement in general, that the lesbian issues are kept down so that we don't alienate the heterosexual women. And that is a big concern to me, because I think it's about time that we actually got somewhere with the lesbian issues that have been on the agenda for the last 25 plus years.